All traces are being followed up. An arrest warrant has been issued for this suspect, both in Germany and within the Schengen countries, so also in Europe.
It's Thursday, December 22nd. This is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, German authorities identify a suspect in this week's deadly truck attack in Berlin.
There is a new suspect. A manhunt is ongoing. We are talking about a suspect, not necessarily the perpetrator. The investigation continues in all directions. All traces are being followed up. An arrest warrant has been issued for this suspect, both in Germany and within the Schengen countries, so also in Europe.
Evacuations continue from eastern Aleppo, and the fallout from the assassination of Russia's ambassador to Turkey continues. That's all on today's International Edition. German police are engaged in a manhunt to find a Tunisian man suspected of involvement in Monday's deadly truck rampage in Berlin. An arrest warrant issued Wednesday names Anis Amri and lists him as a Tunisian citizen born in the town of Gaza. The wanted notice says that he has at least 6 different aliases and 3 different nationalities in the past and is considered armed and dangerous. Following a briefing Wednesday from security officials, Interior Minister Thomas de Maizière said police had identified Amri as a new suspect, but stressed that he is a suspect, but not necessarily the assailant.
Es gibt einen neuen Verdächtigen.
There is a new suspect. A manhunt is ongoing. We are talking about a suspect, not necessarily the perpetrator. The investigation continues in all directions. All traces are being followed up. An arrest warrant has been issued for this suspect, both in Germany and within the Schengen countries, so also in Europe.
The Interior Minister of North Rhine-Westphalia State, Ralf Jaeger, said that Amri applied for asylum in Germany in 2015, but his request was denied. Media reports say authorities found asylum papers belonging to the Tunisian man in the cab of the truck after it was stolen and used to plow through a crowded Berlin Christmas market, killing 12 people and injuring dozens more. The government in Berlin said 12 people are still receiving treatment for injuries sustained in the attack, but a large number of victims with minor injuries are being released. Meanwhile, U.S. President-elect Donald Trump said Wednesday the violent attacks in Europe this week prove that he is right about his plans when he assumes power next month to institute tough screening of Muslims attempting to enter the United States. According to the president-elect, "You know my plans all along. I've been proven to be right, 100% correct. What's happening is disgraceful," Trump said in a brief exchange with reporters. Asked about the truck attack on a Christmas market in Berlin that killed 12 people and the assassination of a Russian diplomat in Ankara, Turkey, Trump described the violence as "an attack on humanity." That's what it is, an attack on humanity, and it's got to be stopped. In his lengthy run for the White House, Trump at first called for an outright ban on Muslims entering the United States, but since then has promised to start what he called extreme vetting of people trying to enter the U.S. from countries where there have been terrorist attacks. Coming up, evacuations continue from eastern Aleppo, Syria. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Music.
Time now for a look at the top stories. Donald Trump aims to finish his cabinet appointments. President Obama bans drilling in parts of the Arctic and the Atlantic. Investigators look into a deadly explosion at a Mexican fireworks factory that killed 31 people. Finnish mobile phone maker Nokia has filed lawsuits against Apple alleging patent infringement. And Volkswagen reaches a deal with the United States and the state of California over allegations it cheated on emissions tests. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and our VOA mobile app. The final evacuations of rebels and civilians from the northern city of Aleppo have resumed after being delayed for one day. The buses are now moving again from East Aleppo, a UN official in Syria told the Reuters news agency. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said 60 buses were ready to evacuate 3,000 people from freezing temperatures in eastern Aleppo in what would be the final step of the rebels leaving the part of Aleppo they seized 4 years ago. But the buses were held up due to a last-minute snag in the evacuation agreement. Meanwhile, the UN Security Council approved the delivery of humanitarian aid across borders and conflict lines in Syria for another year in a resolution aimed at reaching thousands in need in rebel-held areas. Deputy UN spokesman Farhan Haq said evacuations resumed after a delay and more than 25,000 people have been evacuated from besieged neighborhoods in the eastern part of the city between December 15th and 20th.
UN teams have maintained a presence at the Ramuse government checkpoint in Aleppo to observe the evacuations from East Aleppo since the 15th of December. The ICRC estimates that more than 25,000 people have been evacuated from the besieged neighborhoods in eastern Aleppo between the 15th and 20th of December.
The Security Council resolution was adopted unanimously and expresses grave distress at the continued deterioration of the devastating humanitarian situation in Syria, where more than 13.5 million people need urgent assistance. It cited the alarming situation in besieged areas where hundreds of thousands of civilians are trapped. UN staff have been present at a Syrian government checkpoint outside eastern Aleppo, but Haq couldn't say for sure if any observers were on hand in the eastern part of the city where civilians were loading into buses.
Protection of civilians leaving these areas remains the biggest concern. The process for evacuation was traumatic, with crowding and vulnerable people waiting for hours and exposed to sub-zero temperatures. All remaining civilians must be allowed to safely leave should they choose to do so. Access to people in need to provide them with life-saving humanitarian assistance is also urgently needed.
Haq said an additional 20 UN staff have been deployed in the area to bolster the 100 already in the area to help with evacuations. The evacuations in Aleppo are being conducted under an agreement negotiated by Russia and Turkey that has also called for people to leave two villages in Idlib province that have been under rebel siege. After a meeting in Moscow among the foreign ministers of Russia, Turkey, and Iran, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov told reporters the three nations used their influence to force the evacuation, suggesting they have become the main power brokers in Syria's nearly six-year conflict. The foreign ministers drafted a proposal that Russia said amounts to a blueprint for a ceasefire in Syria and potentially an end to the war. The urgency for Russia intensified after its ambassador to Turkey was assassinated Monday in Ankara by a man shouting, "Don't forget Aleppo." I spoke with VOA's Dorian Jones in Istanbul about the fallout from the assassination and what it means for Ankara's relations with Moscow and with Washington.
Well, I think it will ultimately depend on the outcome of the investigation and who is actually behind this killing. The person who carried it out was a 22-year-old police officer who was subsequently gunned down by security forces. But who is responsible for this will ultimately, I think, have the final impact on Turkish-Russian relations. At the moment, Moscow seems to be backing Ankara's line that this was a ploy to undermine the rapprochement efforts between the two countries and ongoing cooperation to end the Syrian war. The Turkish president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, is saying that the evidence makes him almost certain that the man behind this was the Turkish Islamic cleric, Fethullah Gulen, who lives in the United States. Gulen and his followers are blamed by Ankara for a failed coup attempt in July, and Ankara maintains that Gulen is still trying to destabilize the country. Gulen denies any responsibility in the coup and also has denied anything to do with this assassination attempt.
Now, relations between Ankara and Moscow have gotten a little bit warmer, but there was a meeting between Turkey, Iran, and Russia in Moscow about resolving the Syrian civil war. Russia is supporting the Assad government. Ankara and President Erdogan have been supporting the rebels. How is that working out?
Well, yes, indeed. And in fact, you have to remember that last year, Turkish jets shot down a Russian bomber operating in Syria, which threw Turkish-Russian relations into the deep freeze. But there has been now a rapprochement effort since June. And the main factor behind this is that both sides realize that they need one another to resolve the Syrian civil war. There's a recognition that this civil war can't carry on indefinitely. It is destabilizing the region and destabilizes these two countries' interests. So they realize that they do have to work together to end this. And we are already seeing that cooperation over Aleppo, the evacuation of refugees and fighters from Aleppo, was achieved through cooperation between Moscow and Ankara. And also cooperation between Moscow and Ankara has allowed Turkish military forces to enter into Syria in an operation against Islamic State and Kurdish rebels operating in Syria. So we are seeing a deepening relationship, at least for now, over cooperation over Syria. And that is in many ways why the Russian President Vladimir Putin does appear to be giving the benefit of the doubt to Turkey over this assassination, at least for now.
Now, I have heard in media reports there have been conspiracy theories in Russia that this assassination was a Western plot to upset that warming of relationships with Moscow. Is there any merit to any of that kind of claim?
Well, indeed, much of the Turkish pro-government media have echoed that accusation. They have accused the CIA of working with the Turkish Islamic cleric Fethullah Gulen to carry out this assassination as a means to thwart the rapprochement between Moscow and Ankara. It has to be said, relations between Ankara and Washington, Turkey is a NATO member, has been very difficult over the last few months, particularly differences over Syria and along with U.S. concerns over human rights situation in Turkey. And there is this claim that this assassination is aimed at trying to thwart this rapprochement between the two countries. Now, it has to be said that this has been dismissed out of hand by Washington, but this is an allegation and a conspiracy that is believed by many followers of the Turkish government, and it does appear also in Moscow. And to be honest, this will be very happy music to the ears of Moscow as well, because one of the strategies they are following is that this rapprochement with Syria and rapprochement in general is seen as ultimately weakening Turkey's membership with NATO and its ties to the West, which is a strategic goal of Moscow.
Reporter Dorian Jones from Istanbul. Coming up, the Dow flirts with 20,000 again, but did it pass the benchmark? And we'll hear about scientists who are working to make long-term space travel a reality. You're listening to VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A new study published in the medical journal Molecular Psychiatry suggests that overindulging on a lot of high-fat foods as a youngster could harm a person's cognitive functions as an adult. It's no secret that children and teens love to eat junk food. These high-fat foods often provide young people with convenient and inexpensive eating options. Eating high-fat foods over a long period of time can lead not only to problems such as obesity and possibly damage young and still developing brains, but new research is showing that eating a lot of fatty foods during adolescence may impact the brain in adulthood. The findings were made after researchers compared the brains of young and adult mice who were fed either high-fat or normal diets. The first signs of impaired cognitive functions of young mice who ate a high-fat diet started to show after only 4 weeks and before they even started to show a weight gain. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. On Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed down by 0.16%. The S&P and the NASDAQ were also lower. The Dow has flirted with the 20,000 mark several times in recent days. Jill Malandrino covers the markets for us in New York, and she told me there are two ways to look at the benchmark in keeping with the holiday season. One is nice and one is naughty.
Well, it was really interesting coming into Wednesday's trade. We had a 17th record close on the Dow Jones Industrial Average since November 8th election. And going into trade, we were just 25 points shy of that key level of 20,000. Now, Nike reported earnings Tuesday into Wednesday. Nike is a Dow component. If the earnings were a little bit better, if their forward guidance was more encouraging going into Wednesday's session, I think we may have gotten that push over the 20,000 mark. Now, there's very interesting arguments. They're both compelling, and they both make sense for naughty or nice. So let's take a look at both of them. If there's enough energy to move through 20,000 convincingly, then I think that could potentially act as the next floor in the Dow. In other words, if we break down 20,000, future gains could be more likely. With end-of-the-year buying by institutional investors or your portfolio managers, that continues to drive up the markets. And both the retail investor, like you and I, and economic sentiment continue to improve. So there's certainly support for an extended upward move. Now, we also have to take a look at the other side. In the short term, of course, a pullback is quite possible. You can make a good argument that markets have gotten a bit ahead of themselves, and a reassessment after the end of the year would be reasonable. And that's based on historical trends. You have to remember, there is some uncertainty in the market politics. There's a lot going on in China, of course, European politics. And here in the U.S., it's yet to be seen whether President-elect Trump's administration and Congress will be able to work together. So I think going into the end of the year, you're not going to have portfolio managers make that much of a move. They are chasing some performance here. And why would you sell and take the tax hit when you're going to have better treatment with your taxes next year?
Jill Malandrino covers Wall Street for us. She spoke to us from New York. U.S. President Barack Obama has declared a ban on offshore oil and natural gas drilling throughout large areas of the Arctic and the U.S. Atlantic seaboard. It's an apparent attempt to cement his environmental legacy in the waning days of his presidency. Obama's action bans drilling in about 98% of Arctic waters owned by the U.S. government, which totals about 46,500,000 hectares. It also bans drilling off an area of the Atlantic coast that stretches from southeastern Virginia to the Canadian border. But the American Petroleum Institute, which represents the oil and natural gas industry, believes the bans will be reversed under new President Donald Trump. Travel to Mars has been one of President Obama's priorities during his administration as well. In the new sci-fi film Passengers, people on Earth are on a 120-year trip to colonize a new planet, but something goes wrong on their way there. Scientists say while much of the movie is a work of fiction, there is some real science behind many of the ideas in it. VOA's Elizabeth Lee in Los Angeles explores what they are.
In the movie Passengers, humans hibernate for a 120-year voyage to a distant planet for a new life.
We woke up 90 years too soon.
Finding a habitable planet is not so far-fetched for Tiffany Kataria, a NASA scientist who studies planets that orbit another star, or exoplanets.
The ultimate goal of studying exoplanets is to really find an Earth twin, to find some other planet out there that's Earth-like that maybe eventually we could colonize one day and explore.
In the movie, the passengers travel on a rotating spaceship to create gravity. The idea is not just science fiction, says aerospace engineer John Bradford.
So that's one of the main ways we're going to mitigate some of the challenges and things that come out in microgravity environment, damage to the human body in terms of bone demineralization and muscle atrophy. Having this artificial gravity solves those problems, and rotating it is the best way to do it, I think.
As for hibernating in space, that's what Bradford's company, SpaceWorks Enterprises, is researching with the hope that it could be used for human flight to Mars. One of the possible effects of spending time in space and long-term microgravity is intracranial pressure, which impairs an astronaut's vision. Bradford says that's something hibernation or human status can help, among other benefits.
Actually, cooling down the body, reducing the metabolism, reduces that intracranial pressure. It's one of the treatments here on Earth. We reduce the amount of food they need, amount of oxygen. We can put them in a very small space, as you see here.
Bradford says his company would first start human status for 2 weeks.
That 2 weeks is within current medical technology. It's limited data set, but that has been done before. But ultimately, to get the full benefits, we want to be able to go to 5 or 6 months. And, you know, that will take years, you know, maybe 15 years or so, 20 years to really fully understand all the impacts on the crew. But for the shorter stay and the shorter duration, these 2 week cycles, you know, we're optimistic we could be ready to support the first missions to Mars. So we just got to convince NASA.
As for human space flights beyond Mars in our solar system, that's where science ends and the fiction begins.
So the closest planet we know of that's actually, it's actually close to an Earth mass. It's called Proxima Centauri b. Proxima Cent is 4.2 light years away. And so that's about 25 trillion miles from here. The Juno spacecraft is orbiting Jupiter at 1,000 miles per hour. And so relative to Jupiter, but if we think about that same spacecraft getting maybe a gravity assist and going to Proxima Centauri b, that would take at that same speed, you know, tens of thousands of years. So so really, you know, the technology still needs to make that leap, I think, to be able to achieve light speed travel or close to light speed travel.
It may take years of technology to catch up to the imagination, but audiences can still experience the excitement of space travel by going to movie theaters. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
There's a reason we woke up early.
And in the spirit of the holidays, a Menominee, Wisconsin police officer who stopped a speeding college student ended up tying his necktie for him. Dash cam video of the November 30th traffic stop shows Officer Martin Folschig pulling up behind the University of Wisconsin Stout student in a parking lot. The student explained he was speeding because he was late to give a presentation and was trying to find a friend who could tie his necktie. Folschig asked for the tie and made a knot for the student. He put it around his head and adjusted it after the student put it on. Then the officer sent the student on his way with a warning to slow down. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. You can find us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook, too. We're on VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at @VOA_IE. Thanks for joining us, and thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, and our engineer, Carl Starling. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Enjoy your day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
NATO members must always reaffirm the importance of collective defense and democratic solidarity, said U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry. Speaking at the recent NATO ministerial meeting, he said that peace is best kept through strength and unity, through clarity of purpose and intent, and those qualities remain at the heart of NATO. These principles have been at the core of the alliance since its inception. The reason is very simple. The founders of the alliance witnessed the horror that results when instability and political extremism grow unchecked. They knew that hate and territorial ambition and radicalism, when mixed with economic challenges as well as nationalism, can often lead to a noxious mix that poisons entire nations, entire continents, and can quickly spread beyond control. That's why NATO members recognize it's not enough to speak about values of tolerance, openness, democracy, rule of law, and good governance, said Secretary Kerry. The members of this alliance bear a huge responsibility to push back against ways of authoritarianism, extreme nationalism, and gross violations of national sovereignty, and against threats to security and fundamental human rights. As for the United States, its commitment to NATO and to Article 5, the Collective Defense Clause, transcends politics. This alliance, said Secretary Kerry, has enjoyed political support beyond political parties and beyond one branch of government and across the United States. NATO has delivered an end to the Balkan Wars, delivered solidarity after September 11th, and delivered burden sharing in Afghanistan and against terrorism. As long as there are grave dangers in the world, NATO is going to serve an indispensable purpose, said Secretary Kerry. But an even deeper source of NATO's strength is its commitment to freedom, to human rights, to rule of law, to a structure. This is a defensive alliance, and it is here to defend the order of freedom and the order of liberty and the rule of law.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.